Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Steve Dahl with you.
And Gary Meyer.
And man, we're in trouble again. Look at this.
Les Tracy with Rock and Roll on FM 98. You really
got me down. Mitch Michaels doing the cruise on the loop.
Chicago Rock!
Sky Daniels into the 80s at FM 98. Let's go. You have a remarkable mouth.
We have a remarkable radio station.
The Loop, where Chicago rocks at FM 98.
All right, it's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. So it's official. Just a couple hours ago, the Loop 97.9 is no more, as the station was sold to Christian Broadcaster Educational Media Foundation for $21.5 million, which began airing their K-Love Christian format. Now, thousands are lamenting over the sale on social media about the end of an era, but throughout the week, many have said at the very end, the Loop really wasn't what the Loop we grew up with. It's a shell of its former self, and we're really celebrating the Loop of the past. In the earliest days, we listened from morning till night to Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer, Kevin Matthews, Jonathan Brandmeier, with rock jocks Mitch Michaels, Sky Daniels, Bob Stroud, Bobby Scafish, Patty Hayes, and Wendy Snyder, and the likes of Matt Bisbee, Robin Baumgarten, Dorothy Humphrey, Leslie Kiling, Jimmy DeCastro, and Larry Wharton. Later added Bill Leff and Wendy with their own weeknight talk show. Danny Bonaducci, Pete McMurray, Steve Cochran, and so many others, which included sister station AM 1000. And the lineups were nothing less than legendary. And joining me this morning to talk about the legacy of the Loop are legends themselves. It's Kevin Matthews, Wendy Snyder, Bill Leff, and broadcast executive and all of our bosses, Larry Wharton. Welcome in, everybody.
Hi, Dave.
What's happening?
Dave.
I'm legends. Hi, other Loop legends. I shouldn't say other. It implies that I'm one of them, but I'm glad to be with you guys for the moment.
Kev, you there, buddy?
I'm there, and Larry, you are. You're in this. And Larry, I got to ask you a question. I think you could have negotiated a better deal than $21 million. That's high.
Kev, 21.5. 21.5, I believe. But you know what the irony is, from a business standpoint, do you know what the value of the Loop was when it was peaked? Well, we were all there. Like everyone on this call, fans, Dave Plyer was there when it was of the value I'm about to tell you.
75, but 125, what was it?
It was 200.
Oh, 200
million. $200 million. Wow. And it was based on, that's just based on, and some of you business folks out there know, it was based on what we were earning times the multiple of the value of a radio station at the time.
Wow.
So it peaked around 200, and then, and I don't mean to just roll here, but just because it's related, the company decided to change the format one other time, and Kev will remember this, maybe Wendy and Bill too, but they wanted to make it Best Music on the Planet.
Oh, yeah.
Some genius consultant, Best Music on the Planet. I tried to fight it, and I got sent to Detroit.
I remember that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, right? And it's Michael Corleone chapter, you know, that's in Detroit. Don't start the car. And then it didn't work. So guess what? They sold it to another Christian, if you will, based company. It was Bonneville for $75 million, I believe.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah,
so that's a little history on the value of this.
But I feel like everybody's like in this mourning, so we're doing it all on social media. But I don't think we're mourning the Loop of today. We're mourning the Loop of yesteryear in all of this. I mean, nobody's really – it's not about now, and with all due respect, not about ManCow. It's about those days in the 80s and 90s that we're all talking about, right, Bill?
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Loop has not been the Loop for several years. The Loop that I'm upset about losing is my very first job and the camaraderie. We all hung out. I mean, Matt Bisbee was doing promos that said, if you're not cranking it, you must be yanking it. Do you remember that,
oh, yeah,
guys?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very edgy stuff. Kev, what about you? I mean, seriously, people are talking about the good old days, right?
Well, my saddest day is when AM 1000 flipped to ESPN.
Yeah.
So that was, to me, that's when it imploded. I was briefly on overnights on the FM, and then they bought the AM and moved everything over there, and that's my fondest memories.
Yeah. Larry, I know you're just joining us for a little bit today, but when you think of the Loop, and I'm talking about, again, those golden years, you know, it was a special time. I mean, you have to look back and say that was one unique time in radio that we'll probably never relive again, right?
I think so. I think, the whole industry and consumer marketplace has changed measurably, so that's a big part of it. But I think the assembly of people on and off the air then was just amazing. And Wendy just said one of the MVPs that was not probably a silent MVP that we all know was possibly the most valuable person, and that's Matt Bisbee, the voice of the Loop. And, it's the amazing contribution by a guy that's not a household name, right? But we all know that.
Sure. And of course, Jimmy DeCastro, because he pulled it all together, didn't he?
Hey, now.
Hey, I know I wouldn't have been there if it weren't for Jimmy. I mean, I met Jimmy in the 80s, and I was his customer. And he was my customer, actually. And then one thing led to another, and he gave me that great opportunity. So I owe Jimmy all of it.
But Larry, you and Jimmy and Matt had this philosophy. You had this way of doing business that I don't think anybody in radio has ever done before or after. Do you know what I mean by that, right?
I think I do. And, you know, quite frankly, and I came from ABC television at the time, and I was in a much more structured company and environment. And it was Jimmy who taught me that we could do it our way, right? He called it high school with money, but then he behaved that way.
Yeah.
But it delivered, too. That's the thing. You said it was worth, what, $200 million back then? I mean, come on. It was working.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was working. And you know, we talked about reflecting and talking about the creativity that, you know, was on and off the air. And it seemed so natural at the time, the creativity. Now it seems so manufactured, if at all.
But you guys let them do. You really let all the hosts do whatever they wanted. I mean, you really did. It was pretty much an open forum. So how did you deal with those moments, whether it was with the FCC or complaints and stuff? I mean, was it, you knew what they were all about. You knew what their personalities was. You knew what they were going to deliver, and you knew it was delivering ratings. So how do you balance trying to manage this group and you know, maybe try not to get fined on and off every single week with letting them do what they wanted to do and keep the ratings where they were?
Hey, look, it was a tightrope act. It really was. And as we got bigger, the stakes got higher. You know, when I got there in the late 80s, half of our revenue came from Budweiser.
Oh, wow.
And Kev knows that to be true because Kev and some of the other talent had personal service contracts with Budweiser. And we had to start doing business with other beers. We were getting so big. So that was an interesting internal moment in change. And yeah, the FCC was going through a lot of defining of what's indecent and obscene. We were part of that. And we were the company because of our owner, Scott Ginsburg, who told the FCC, your rules here, your statutes are so vague that we don't know how to abide by them. You know, they say that which is a patently offensive as deemed by community standard. We said, whose community?
Right.
Because not in ours. And our company stood up and didn't pay the fine and we were recognized by the FCC. No, the FCC said you were right. Yeah. We'll make a better standard, which they never have.
And everybody was, I know Johnny would have people on the air and not tell them they were on the air, but Kev, you did stuff within the lines. Professional broadcasters did not really break the FCC rules that much, did they?
Oh, yeah, I broke the rule. I knew I was breaking the rule. But Larry had no problem paying the fine. What Larry's bringing up is a really good point. At that time, we're associated with Howard Stern. The FCC went from a $5,000 fine to a $200,000, $300,000 fine.
Wow.
Literally, that was a game changer.
And I will also add, it wasn't the fear of the fines getting so big as much as it was the fear of maybe losing your license if you got more than one.
Right.
What year did you get there, Kev?
I got about 1986. The Bears had just won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because Kev was on overnights, and I was just weekends. And really, I mean, the FM side, I'm sorry, the Loop played some kick-ass rock and roll.
Yeah.
I will say that
absolutely,
for sure.
Yeah.
But the personality end of it, Kev, you were so great with your overnight loyal followers who just ate you up.
Yeah, you get that. Absolutely.
So, well, one guy, again, Greg Salk, who is still, he's over at XRT now. Greg taught me a lot, and Greg is so responsible for the sound and the direction of the Loop. And I still use things today that he taught me, and I really appreciate somebody like a Greg Salk, who was really demanding in a great way, and he set the bar so high I never wanted to lower that bar.
But you know what? You were a guy that took those chances and took those risks. And I hear these stories a lot about how people get on the radio. You were sending stuff in to Steve and Gary in the very beginning, right?
When you
were
I was so bored down in St. Louis. Right. I could do stand up comedy, which I did, but I needed an outlet, and I was sending them tapes. Ron Reagan was president, and I sent the boys a lot of my what eat me. So yeah, that was my release with Steve and Gary.
But then Jimmy called you. He flew you on a private plane with your wife to Chicago, and. Which was a smart thing to do, and really schmoozed you. And you weren't set on coming here right away.
No, I wasn't. I turned him down twice. He actually it was a United flight, but it was first class. And you know, it just as soon as we landed and got into the Hancock Building, it the rest was magic. I felt very safe, and it was an asylum that I wanted to be a part of.
When did you realize that? People started to get what you were doing in Chicago. It was pretty quick, wasn't it?
Yeah. I can remember when I went to the AM, I had to increase the power when the sun went down. And that's when we got into 32 states in Canada. And I thought, wow, I got to get it up. So I would ask women to just talk suggestively, and we would raise the power every night. And I'm like, wow, they're letting me do this. I'm fine with that. I loved it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you crosstalked. That was a big thing day, too, with Brandmeier and Steve and Gary, too, is on the way in and on the way out. Those crosstalks could last 40 minutes.
Oh, they were great times. Yeah. But also, you know, hanging with Larry, you know, when you're not in the station, I had my – Larry's just became my best friend. And, you know, every moment inside the station and outside the station was just precious. And culturally, what was happening in Chicago at the time, not only with radio, but look at what the Bulls were doing and Michael Jordan and the Bears and culture. It was just a magnificent time to be in Chicago.
But then you talk about outside the studio, the golf outings, the proms, all the promotional stuff. I mean, you think about the radio, and you guys did a lot of that too. I mean, there was so many promotional things that you would do for a radio station that there's nothing close to it today. I almost think there's kind of a lack of creativity in all that. And it was the proms, it was the golf outings, and you guys were sharing with me last week about, you know, the fact that you got, you know, kicked out of 10 golf outings and golf courses and Larry's private club in 10 years. I mean, that's, but you were 12. You were doing some pretty edgy stuff.
Oakbrook Hills three times. Yeah. They gave us 2 second chances.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
and it's a wonder I didn't die of alcohol poisoning, which almost happened. My first 2 weeks in Chicago, I literally almost had to go to the hospital. It was awesome. It was just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Larry, you were telling me about an $8,000 bill for a Long Island iced tea.
Can you hear me? Yeah. I was, because we challenged Kevin and I in our first charity golf outing, challenged our bill, because we were just shocked by it. And when we went in, we thought we found a flawed billing part, and it was an $8,000 Long Island iced tea. They came back 20 minutes. They said, Mr. Ward, Mr. Matthews, I apologize. I'm sorry, but it turns out your friends, Ms. Thayer, ordered a caddy to go to Ace and buy a garbage can, and actually there was 26 bottles of alcohol in that Long Island iced tea. And I think we probably could have charged you more.
Yeah, yeah. But Kev, you said you just ran into the priest that was at one of those outings, and he's forgiven everybody, right?
Yeah, Father Smith, I did. A couple of weeks, just days ago, I was with him, and I literally asked for forgiveness, and he did. You know, Larry, one time, every year we would go out to Vegas because we would open up and christen casinos. And one time, I'm on the plane with Larry and Steve and Gary and Johnny, and I think Danny, and we're flying out, and I can remember the pilot said, we're making our final approach for Las Vegas. Please buckle up. And I asked the flight attendant, I said, hey, can I get one more beer? And she goes, no, you drank them all. But the times we'd have in Vegas, Larry, remember? It was crazy what we did in Vegas.
Well, we can't talk about it.
Not at all.
No, it's off. Yeah.
You guys used to go out, Kev and Larry and Johnny B, and you used to call Eddie's show when you guys were out drinking all night. That was awesome.
That was great. I can remember I was in a limo with Brandmeier and Piranha Man, and Johnny just started tearing Piranha Man's clothes off and opened the sunroof and throwing his shoes out, his big Pakistani shoes out, and his pants and his underpants, and he was completely nude in the limo. That was horrible.
97.9, The Loop FM, 1967.
Fell out of bed. Well, when you come into Chicago, please come up here. And
okay, listen, Sade, let me say hi to all the listeners in the region. Hey, you Chicagoites and all that. How you doing, guys? Rock on. And I'll see you when we get there.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, gents.
Bye-bye.
See you around. Bye.
Yikes.
It's Paul friggin' McCartney.
Yeah.
Let's go to Fort Wayne. The Rookie and the Cookie, Delirious and Rookie. They're all together, goofy. The Jim Trunks family. They need a mausoleum so all the kin can see them. You know they're off the deep end. The Jim Trunks family. Did it. Boom, boom.
Dad! Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Dad.
Hi.
What's wrong?
Oh, I just had an awful thing happen to me.
What happened?
I went down to the store this morning, and a bunch of kids, they took my pants down, and they taunted me. They laughed at me.
What? Whoa.
Ah!
What happened to you?
Is Miss Clausian, please?
Just a minute.
God bless you.
She is being married Saturday, and she will not be here today or tomorrow. She's at home.
Okay, well, the person that sent me this letter is going to get beaten up.
I'm sorry.
Do you understand? Do you know anything about Proud Mary and Celebrate?
No.
I represent the band. I'm an attorney at law.
Oh, Proud Mary, yeah.
Yeah.
Proud
Mary. And my band has a clause that says the Proud Mary clause. It says they must be able to play Proud Mary Celebration.
Uh-huh. Well, did she object?
Yes, she did object, and I am not, and I don't mean to yell at you, but I can't stand for that. Is she coming into work?
No, she won't be here today or tomorrow.
Would you call her at home and tell her that Jonathan Brandmeier, representing the Boner Brothers, would like her to call back right away, because there will be no wedding if we don't get to play those two songs.
Boner Brothers. And
wait, could you say that again to make sure you had it right?
B-O-N-N-E-R.
But I'd like to hear you say it again.
Boner.
Say it again.
Boner Brothers.
Say it again.
Boner.
Okay, what?
Boner.
I like,
No,
just,
you didn't, no, wait a minute, you didn't say it the same way you did before.
Boner.
Say it stronger.
Boner.
591-ROCK, 591-ROLL, we're here for your tax woes.
Yeah.
All night long.
It's ugly.
How are you today?
I'm, fine under the circumstances.
What are these circumstances you speak of?
It's the saddest day of the year, is all.
Income tax day?
Yeah. It's so sad, isn't it? It's just terrible.
No.
Do you ever, I always wonder, like, as I'm writing that check, and I literally this year for the first time kissed the check as I put it in the envelope, because you're kissing the money goodbye, so I kissed the check and I put it in the envelope.
I'd spit on it first, put a big loogie on there, and then mail it there.
Day player on 720 WGN. We're talking about the final days of the Loop FM that we all grew up with the legends themselves, Kevin Matthews, Wendy Snyder, Bill Leff, and broadcast executive Larry Wirt. Wendy, I mean, we talk about the music of the station, too, because, you know, people didn't like the Loop at the end, but, man, that was a station, as you said, that rocked. And you were the first, like, one of the first female rock jocks,
Patty,
right?
Patty Hayes.
Patty was, yeah.
Patty
yeah.
Hayes gets full credit. She was the queen of rock and roll. I was the princess.
Oh, yeah, but I'll tell you, I remember, you know, I was in my first freshman year in college listening to you on the air, and I thought, how cool, and I could tell just by your voice that if I ever ran into you, you'd kick my ass.
Not if you lit my cigarette for me
back
then.
That's true.
But I went from the rock and roll end of things, which the Loop was the best rock and roll in the whole city.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hands down.
Yeah.
And then Howard Stern came to town on the AM 1000. I did live news inserts. And that's when I was put on Kevin's show. And the introduction to talk radio changed my life. So, Kev, Jack Silver put me on your show. And you just really, you opened me up, Kev. I got to say it.
Well, it was just, I loved working with all the people. I've worked with so many. And the one thing that I can honestly say, I wanted them to shine more than me. I had no problem bringing on the most talented people, because if you could replace me, do it. And I wanted people to just feel, I wanted the most out of people. And that's what happened.
Yeah. But you were, and I was reading your bio. You said you were passed around like an old, you know, you did Kev show. You won Gary. You said in the divorce.
In the divorce.
You were co-hosting with Wendy and Tony, and then I think it was 95 that Bill, you joined forces with Bill, and that's when you started your 20-year plus legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. So what, you know, you were a fan of The Loop, Bill, for
huge
all those
fan.
Years, right?
Gigantic fan.
Yeah. And what were you doing at the time before you started doing radio? I mean,
I was doing stand-up.
Just stand-up.
Yeah.
So how did the radio opportunity come about?
I wanted to have a family. My wife and I wanted kids, and I didn't want to be traveling doing stand-up. And I would, whenever Danny Bonaducci was in town doing stand-up, I was his opening act, and we became friends.
That's cool.
And then Danny got a job, and one Friday I was guesting on the show, and he said, "What's up?" And I said, "I'm going to stop doing stand-up. I got to find something local." And he goes, "Well, why don't you host a show here?" And I
That's
go,
amazing.
"Oh, okay. I'll start on Monday. That'll be fun." "What time do you need me to come in on Monday? I'll be the host."
Yeah.
And he talked to Larry, and he talked to Matt Bisbee. He told him about me, and they were looking for somebody to go alongside Wendy late at night. And I used to listen to them when I would do clubs here in town. That was my ride home, was listening to Wendy and Tony. I loved it.
Okay. You listened to us fight?
Yeah, I would listen to you guys fight.
Was that what it was all about?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. And I had never met Wendy, but I'd heard her on the air 150 times. And it just, like, right off the bat, it
clicked.
It made sense.
So did you even meet before the show for just a little bit?
No,
you just really kind of went right on the air together.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And I do have...
Shotgun urge. Shotgun.
Yeah, but this one worked.
Wendy knows this was a shotgun.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So how did you figure out the rhythm for your show? I mean, like, what did you just go on air and just start chatting and figured it out from there for the most part?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was exactly that. Like Kevin said, we didn't want it to be what Kevin was doing or what Johnny was doing or Stephen Gary. It became very improvisational. Wendy's not trained in improvisation, but somehow just inherently knows all the rules of whatever said, run with it.
I learned from him.
Yeah.
Well,
seriously.
Thank you. But I mean, I learned how to do this. My pacing was a stand-up pacing. And Wendy said early on, you know, you have to make this last for 4 hours. When you do stand-up, you're doing it for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the rules are different when you do radio.
So you learned a little bit from...
Oh, a lot of it.
Like I learned a lot from you, obviously, as well. Absolutely.
Thanks.
So I just got this email in that somebody's a little ticked who wanted to be on the show, who said he's a legend like all of you, and that's Jim Schwartz's. Jimmy, are you there now?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. What's going on?
I could have added a lot. Larry, are you still there?
Jim, it's been a long time. I am.
I'm just saying, if you got to hit a ball, you might as well hit a ball. You know, I'll talk to you later.
That's Larry, code for Jimmy. Yeah.
Larry and I are doing something on television. He is... Larry and I are working. I can't talk about it, but it's huge.
Oh. You're going to be on TV, Jim?
Well, if it's television, that's probably where I'm going to go.
Yep.
Good call, Wendy.
Thanks.
Wendy, he always told me that he was probably too good-looking to just be on radio.
Right. Yeah.
Right. It's true.
Yep.
It's true.
How's the casino over at Beaver Island doing? Is that
it's fine? Fantastic. Yeah. It's fantastic. I'm taking over with Steve Wynn. You know, look at his career.
Yeah, he's doing good. Jimmy, how's the boy? How's Luger? Is everything okay with your son?
He's fine. He's a grown man now in Sweden. He's gay. He lives. He does Olympic training. And
yeah,
he's a good man. Yes,
that's excellent. Congratulations.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. And you can get a lot of what can you get up at the casino? You can get some M80s, I heard, right?
I get M80s, medical marijuana, medical meth.
There's medical meth.
Medical meth right now, yeah. It's a good time. We're on an Indian reservation. Come on up, leave the kids home, bring them up. We put them in cars. It's a good time. It is.
Jimmy, do you hear this a lot? I'm sure a lot of the guys, the younger broadcasters, come up to you, Jimmy, and say, "You're the reason I got into radio." Do you hear that a lot?
I hear it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting old now.
Yeah. Who owns WFRT now?
WFRT is actually the same group that's taken over the Loop. They're doing fantastic.
Is that true?
Yeah. It's not a bad move. I just think they paid too much, $21 million.
Yeah.
I'd say maybe 3.5 tops. Seriously.
That's fantastic. Nice talking to you, Jim.
Yeah, eat me.
Wow.
Right.
Isn't it ironic, though, that a Christian station has to take over for the Loop did to it? Is that why?
Just to kind of cleanse it out. Yeah, cleanse it out a little bit. Yeah. What's the legacy of the Loop? What is it going to be, Larry, to our generation?
Well, to the people who had it as part of their lifestyle and their day in the 80s and the 90s, you know, and even in this last decade to some extent, although I think it really did change, I think it's just going to be a great, we're lucky to have experienced it, memory, right? It's just something that no one can take away, right? Nothing stays the same, but no one can take it away. Again, I just feel fortunate to have been just a really small part of it.
Larry, there's a movie on cable right now that is about the early days of the National Lampoon. I don't know if you've seen it, but I was watching those scenes where they're all in the office. It's all the head honchos and the brainiacs of the National Lampoon, all funny people together just making each other laugh. And when I watched that movie, it was so reminiscent of those days at the Loop.
You know, Kevin mentioned that some of the off-air was maybe even better than some of the on.
Yeah.
We would take trips, client trips, and spend time together and just giggle and just have fun. And look, it was a pretty serious business. It helped grow a company, a radio company, that eventually became Clear Channel. Our two stations in Chicago became 430 stations.
Wow.
And yeah. you have to give Jim DeCastro giant credit for that. But it really was the Loop that gave us credibility with the bankers and to get funding to start growing. And so many people were part of it. And Johnny, Kevin, Steve, and Gary, you know, a big part of the profile. But as Wendy said, all of those great FM spinsters, if you will, Skafish and Stroud and Patty Hayes and
Sky Daniels.
Somebody that I'm just not even thinking of.
Sky Daniels, Terry Gibson, John Fisher, Mitch Michaels.
Yeah. And Larry, we don't want to leave off Liz Wilde, do we?
Oh.
Liz Wilde.
Yep.
You may not like what he says.
But somebody's got to write a story about this, right? I mean, somebody's got to write a story about the Loop days. I mean, there's got to be something to pull together with all the memorabilia stories that you guys have. I mean, I think there's a lot of people hungry for that type
people
of stuff.
People love science fiction, Dave. They love it.
And I met my husband there, so I'm happy Jimmy Mack worked there when I did.
That's right. That's right. Kev, what about you? What is the legacy? Mack. What does the legacy of the Loop mean to you?
Methadone, kind of, you know, it was a synthetic heroin.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, and we are working on, there is a documentary.
Yeah.
Now more than ever. It just, what it did, how it impacted culturally, everything. It really did. It was just that puzzle. And like I said, living in Chicago at that time, the Loop was just a piece of this puzzle, but it was happening culturally. You could never live that again because of everything.
Dave, you know what was nice during those days is whenever a kid would commit a crime, they'd show him on the news and he was always wearing a Loop t-shirt. That always made you feel good, didn't it?
Which, who has a box of Loop t-shirt in their basement or crawl space because somebody's going to make a fortune now?
I've got the AM1000 suit. You know, they're selling them online. And on Facebook, they said they sold 2,000 yesterday because people are clamoring for them, I swear.
Wendy, you guys will remember, we had a store at North Pier.
The Loop Store.
And when it shut down, I have most of that up in like my crawl space at home. So I think we should have an event, a charity event.
Larry, next year marks the 30th anniversary of the Gym Shorts outing. I think we ought to have an auction and have that, help out like a Father Smith in Maryville.
Oh, yeah.
Or something. I've got a lot, and I know Brandmeier and everybody else does.
I think I bought everything.
We argued about the t-shirt, whether it should say who caught one or who farted. And we argued about it like
strategic meeting.
And so, we printed both of them.
Yeah,
and it gave birth to Taste Like Chicken, which was another Loop.
Exactly.
One.
Yep.
Jackass was my favorite.
Jackass is great. We got away with anything. We actually came up with a commercial. It was one of my first fights with Greg Salk because I got some video that, Dancing Robert, right? Joey Vagadona.
Yeah.
And the way I got that video because Mike Watercutt was trying to show me something I could play at our holiday party and make fun of Dahl. And then, true story, and then all of a sudden, we made us laugh so much. I said, why don't we just make a commercial? And Mike said, why don't we? And the Persian Gulf War had just happened, and we wanted to put something on TV that made people just smile because it was just so, everything was just so down. And Greg Sloan said, what does that have to do with the friggin' rock station? I said, play any song you want.
Right.
Right? I'm giving you free marketing dollars. So he, to his credit, came up with George Thorogood and a couple other tunes, right? Petty. And we all we did was play that video, play a rock tune, and then put up the loop.
Mm.
And it became a nationally syndicated commercial.
Yeah.
And of course, Robert got arrested.
Yeah, that, well.
Robert?
The Joey Bag of Donuts.
Oh, he did? Oh.
What did he do again, Lair?
He got so big and popular. On 4th of July, he started selling fireworks, but he had a menu of, you know, Joey Bag of Donuts with his video, picture, and he used maybe over marketed. I mean, tobacco and firearms. Called me up.
Oops.
So, we did. We just took that spot. We put it out again. We just changed the song to I Fought the Law.
That's absolutely it. Genius.
Oh, man, that's fantastic. Wendy, what about you?
I just, honestly, that was my first real radio job, and just to grow up here in Brookfield, Illinois, listening to The Loop, and then all of a sudden getting to work there with the super celebs, really, Stephen Gary, Johnny B, Buzz Kilman needs to be mentioned,
Kevin, of course.
Yep. Jim Shorts, not really so much, sorry. Hmm. But it was just so cool to
hear that.
Work there at a place.
I heard it, bitch.
Oh, God, here we go.
Oh no. Wow.
What do you say after that?
I got nothing. No, it was just an honor to grow up listening there, and then to work there was really the coolest thing ever. It was a family. Come on. We all really did things outside of work together. Cindy Gatziolis, the late great, was amazing. Promotions were always fun. We all supported each other. It really was one big happy family.
But when I think of The Loop, and I'm just a fan in all this, I mean, I'm kind of honored to be even talking to the four of you, and I mean that sincerely, but when I think about The Loop and those early days, you're just a synonymous to me with Stephen Gary and John. Oh, yes, you are. Oh, absolutely. And again, I always thought you were going to kick my butt if I met him. How about you, Bill?
For me, because my training was not in radio, it was in stand-up, I felt like I was playing on the ultimate all-star team without ever having taken a swing at bat in the majors.
Yeah,
you know, I was on with all the names Wendy just mentioned. And it was just, I had to pinch myself. I'm not to suck up to the WGN family, but it's happened twice in my career that every single day I go into work, as I'm pulling into the parking lot, I go, how did this happen?
Yeah. And getting to do it with Wendy.
It's amazing.
And I mean that by doing radio, but for the second time around, that's pretty cool.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, you came off that bench with no practice and hit a home run.
Oh,
I will say that. You fit right in. Seriously.
But you know what I mean by this. You had to hit home runs because you'd look at the lineup and you go, these guys are all hitting home runs. I better hit home runs, too.
It inspired us to be better every time we were on the
air. Every time, yeah.
Kev, you're doing podcasting at doll.com?
Yeah, and that has been fun because all these characters have grown, and it's great.
Hey, I want to ask a question.
Oh, yeah.
And, Larry, you answer it, okay?
Yeah, Jim, sure. I'll do my best.
Okay. Is Johnny, is that a wig?
Kev, I've showered and bathed with Johnny, and I don't believe it is.
Okay, there we go.
Answer.
You can't take the station off until you find out.
Okay, I'll work on that pretty today, Jim.
Of course.
Hey, you know, we're trying not to forget people, and you talked about some of the great programming being the crosstalks, and I can't help but forget Chet Kopic when Stephen Gary every night would go 5 minutes too long, and he would just get so irate because he'd have. And we all remember when Tony Lasorda was lined up, and he was ready to go, and Chet lost it, right? He just completely lost it, and we made a great promo of him losing it. but Chet Kopic was the pioneer of sports talk radio in Chicago.
He was.
A lot of people copied it afterwards, and we've mentioned Danny, but Danny's who filled in when we put on and took off Howard Stern. And Danny just always did an amazing job at The Loop. He did car karaoke, which was driving down the circular driveway at the Hancock and bouncing off the walls. That was expensive. But, it was indigenous to Loop people. Everyone did their own thing, but They knew what their base was.
You know, you bring up the fact that those shows never ended or started on time. You couldn't really time anything to anything that was on that station.
Well, Gary, I mean, Gary was always in preparing. Steve was always late. That was always an issue.
Yeah,
there's no question. It was the thing. Look, what hit me, because I was a bit of a neophyte to radio when Jimmy brought me in, is that primetime was the morning. And then stations would have a big thing and they'd play music. But we had so much talent. I said, why can't we have primetime all the time? And we really did build that out, you know, uniquely relative to other markets. I don't know of any one that ever pulled that off and sustained that.
It's very cool. And that's where you guys were.
Yeah, we were on first overnights and then 7 to 11. But Larry had the attitude of it's going to be morning shows all day long.
Yeah.
And
that
it was
a success. No one turned off that radio. They turned it on in the morning, man, and left it on until they went to bed.
Although we would have gotten a better air slot if you would have gotten Larry Wirt's name tattooed on your butt.
I'm still thinking about it. I may do that, Larry.
A la Danny.
First time.
All right. Very good.
First time.
And Bill and Wendy, of course, every day at 10 o'clock here on WGN Radio. Thanks for hanging out, everybody.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dave. That was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Kev.
Thanks, you guys. Bye, Jim. See you, Jim.
Bye, Larry. You can edit the Johnny out.
720 WGN.
Hi, man. You making a promo?
Yeah. Brent Miller wants me to cut some promos for kids' radio on GN, but don't tell Jack Silver. I get in trouble.
Oh, let me hear. Now, this is over at GN.
They got kids' radio over there now, but Brent wants me to do the promos.
Let me hear.
Hang on a second. Don't tell Silver. I get in trouble.
Oh, who cares?
This weekend, Kids Radio on a whole new frequency. Following Orion Samuelson's farm report, WGN rocks hard with a salute to Megadeth. It's an ear-bleeding, gut-wrenching thrashathon.
Telling you, GN's changing, man.
Kids Radio. Tell your parents to go to hell, because we're going to kick some ass. Megadeth following Spike Odell. Saturday, Halloween night, we're going to pump some wattage into your pumpkin on your kick-ass station, GN.
It's one of
them,
man. I'm feeling so long.
All right, there's one.
That's good, man.
Does that hard metal stuff again.
Right.